make a resolution which was communicated to departments that were responsible for that. If the minister is not here or the DG, they must, in writing, appoint a person who will be acting on their behalf, representing them, whether representing the DG in this case, because if the minister and the deputy are not here, it could, can only be administration. We don't have that. Where is the minister? Do you know?
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members. As indicated, the minister delegated the authority to the deputy minister to attend because he's got other engagements as well that he's busy with. And unfortunately, we were informed this morning that my deputy minister had fallen ill. We were also informed that, and I'm regurgitating now actually what the committee said, so that's what the information I have at hand as well, Chairperson, that the DG is abroad on official business. And obviously Mr. Elway Africa, who's the chairperson or the project manager, is also ill at this point in time. So that's the information I have, and we have been requested as the department to come make the presentation based on the written comments and inputs that we received, which we've done. We've prepared that, etc. So we're ready to make the presentation on that behalf. And that's how where we stand currently, Chairperson.
I've requested that they check with the minister whether he could be available for this, because really, knowing our schedule, honourable members, I don't know how we're going to fit this if we don't finalise the bill today. I am not sure how we're going to do it, but it has to be done. And it's very interesting because it has been the department that has been pressurizing us to finalize the bid. Now we are here, they seem to be not ready for that. Just to remind the House again, we are politicians. It's not right to remind people that. We are politicians. When we talk about these issues, it's always ideal that we talk to politicians. Administration come as a support. They come as a support. It sounds like we are being undermined as a committee. We're coming from far with this. We've had some issues before, but we're fine with the department. I don't know why this is happening again. Honourable members, can I suggest that we take the presentations, we will see if the minister will be able to join us. I'm not sure they are trying to communicate with him. We will see if he's able to join us. If he doesn't join us, as recommended by members, that we take the presentation, we listen to the presentations, then we may want to find an hour or two, even if it means after hours, just to finalize the bill, because we cannot really interfere with our budget processes. Having said that, Honorable Kawole.
No, Chair, thanks. I'm sorry to disturb you. I agree with you, Chair. But can I be upfront to say, in the presentation, can we be informed that the meeting that we requested, that the three departments come together, did they come together, the issues that were submitted by Treasury, the issues submitted by SAPS, have they been resolved? I think that is the gist of the meeting today. So that it's not just an open-ended presentation. We want to hear submissions by Treasury, submissions by SAPS, those issues. Have they now come to the agreement? Have they met?
You want me to ask them a question now before they start? Okay, I see they want to try to respond to that question. In fact, I was about to say that in my comments that it has been a long process for us, and we are taking this bill very serious because it has to do with the protection of our country. The inflow and outflow of the people and goods to the country and out of the country, how we manage that. It has been a challenge for a while, especially the coordination of the departments that are involved at the ports of entry, and that is why we came up with the BMA. So it's a very important bill. I indicated so many times in our meeting that it's a new bill. It's a new thing that we're doing. We're not amending a bill. It's a new bill altogether. And it is very much important. We cannot take it light. It has been a process in March 2017. We had a pre-briefing. Members will remember we went to Pretoria where we got a pre-briefing of the bill. And on the 8th of June 2017, we got a formal briefing from the department. So the bill was referred to us by NA, and then we got a briefing on the 12th of September 2017. As required, that we had to do public participation. We did our advertisement on the media using 11 official languages for people to make inputs on the bill as referred to us. We also use social media to try to reach out to as many people as possible, and also we had the radio slots in relation to the bill. We received submissions from different stakeholders. We will be considering them today. But over and above that, what we did as a committee, we thought it will be important that we invite departments and some stakeholders to make presentation. There was a request from National Treasury to make a presentation on the bill, which was allowed. We had two meetings with them, members will remember. We also invited SAPS to make a presentation and South African National Defense Force. They were also invited to do a presentation on the bill, which was over and above. We also invited two universities, that was University of the Western Cape and West University, and the ISS to come and make presentation. With the two universities, they indicated that they don't have much issues on the bill, but they made their submissions. Then with ISS, members will remember our last meeting, we were listening to their presentation. That is what we've done so far. Today, honorable members, we will be considering listening to the submission by the general public as well as the stakeholders. But I do want to indicate that in our previous meetings or engagement, especially with SAFS, National Defense Force, as well as National Treasury, an issue that was raised by SAFS very sharp National Commissioner, which came to our attention, and one of the areas we were not comfortable with, that you met with the DG of Home Affairs, you agreed on how to work on certain issues. The committee did not agree on that. The committee said if there's an issue that has to be considered, it must be on the bill, so that you don't find yourself wanting one day if there's an issue that you have to deal with. The submission from SAPS, there were other issues, but the main one was that the bill is saying in areas of the BMA, there will be an exclusive right of the border management law enforcement officer to deal with issues. We had a question ourselves that in our understanding, you cannot put boundaries for the South African National Police. Because what if the BMA law enforcement officers themselves are out of the law? Who will be arresting them? And you cannot put borders for the SAPS. We said it must be on the bill that SAPS will still do their work as mandated by the Constitution. And we recommended as a committee that the exclusive must be removed on the bill. There was an issue on the Defence Force. The issue there was on the private strips. We were told that there are about 200 of them, but we're not much worried about those who are in the inner part of the country. We're worried about those who are closer to the boundaries of the country to say what happens if they bring things inside the country. Who is responsible for that? The National Defense Force indicated that they can only put down a flight if they suspect something, but they are not responsible for those private strips. We then said they must go, you must go SAPS. In fact, one thing they indicated that even if after they've put the flight down, they can't arrest, they don't have powers to arrest. Then we said you must go and have a meeting, come back and tell us how you're going to manage that. That is what the members are referring to. There was an issue about the powers of the law enforcement officers of the BMA versus the powers of SAPS. The question from the committee was that why can't SAPS do what the law enforcement officers are doing? Then we don't know how you finalize that. Those are the main issues that came up in the meeting where we invited departments. I will allow you to present, but in the submission, honorable members, there are sort of serious issues. Some of them have been dealt with, especially from the unions, who are also threatening. I went through the document to mobilize if some of the issues are not addressed in the bill. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise that we're not finalizing today. But let me allow the department to make a presentation, then we'll open for discussions after the presentation. Over to you, sir. I don't know whether you will need an overhead projector or are we going to use the document?
Chairperson, we have a hard copy document. I don't know if there's hard copy documents for all the members. That's right.
Do we all have copies? You don't have a copy, then. We have a member that side. Okay, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members of the committee, and everybody present. The presentation that we'll be doing today relates to all the written inputs that we received that were not necessarily attended to or feedback given on them during the deliberations that we had when we had National Defense Force, SAPS.
So can I just interrupt you? It's not an open-ended meeting. Can I give you an hour? We will see by the end of the hour how far. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So as I've indicated, we're dealing with the presentations, written inputs that we received on the bill. There was approximately 11, 12, altogether there was about 16 representations that we received. SAPS, SARS and the SANDF, we've dealt with those comments during the deliberations that we had when the oral presentations were made in the committee. So what we're going to look here is at 1 to 11, the Alkmaar Refugee Legal and Advocacy Centre, etc., and the inputs they provided and how we responded to that. And at the end of the day, Chair, we'll come back to the issues that Chair has raised, the issue about exclusively how that came about, how that was put into the bill, as well as the functions of the SAPS in terms of 205(3) of the Constitution and how we can most probably deal with that, but also giving context if we look at Section 5 or Clause 5D of the bill and how we'll address those issues. So if I may, Chair, I'm going to try and do it within the time that you've allocated to me, maybe quicker. If we, what we tried to do in this presentation, we went clause by clause, Chair, so from the preamble to the last clause of the bill to indicate who made comments where, so that we know on the clauses of the bill these are the comments that we received. So if we look at the preamble, we received comments from the Refugee Legal and Advocacy Centre, and they basically they indicated that they applauded the objectives of the bill, but that they were a bit concerned regarding the preamble and it doesn't make mention of the non-reforma principle in the Refugees Act. And our response to that is obviously that the BMA bill will focus on border law enforcement functions emanating from several pieces of legislation. And amongst those pieces of legislation would be your Immigration Act, your Refugees Act, with, that specifically deals with refugee matters. And that those pieces of legislation will adequately deal with the issues of asylum seekers who declare their intention to seek asylum. So obviously there's no need to make reference of the principle of non-reforma in the BMA bill because it will be an implementing agency. That policy lies with the department in terms of the Refugees Act. Chair, if we also look, we move to the definition section where the Refugee Legal and Advocacy Center also made inputs. Basically, they indicated that the words of asylum seekers and refugees are not included in the definition section. It's the same comment as I provided just now, that obviously those specific issues are dealt with in the relevant pieces of legislation, i.e. the Immigration Act and the Refugees Act, not the BMA. There will be cooperation between the departments, but it doesn't need to be dealt with in terms of the BMA. The Information for Security Studies Chair made a comment to indicate that the definition border law enforcement area, that they requested clarity on what is required on the actual extent of the border law enforcement area. The issue was the 10 kilometers that was in an or reasonable distance. So what we're indicating that there's also already precedence in this regard in South African legislation that we have on the statute book. It already provides for this defense force SAPs, although if you, for instance, in hot pursuit of a specific individual, what needs to happen, you need to be able to go beyond, whether it's a kilometer beyond the 10 kilometers, etc. So the reasonableness will be dictated by the specific circumstances at that point in time. Chair, if we move to clauses 2 and 3 of the bill, which relates to the application of the Act and the objects of the Act, there was no comments received, written comments from any other role players. We turn to clause 4 of the bill, which deals with the authority itself and the establishment of the authority. In this regard, we received representations from BUSA, and they indicated that during the engagements at the NEDLAC process, business consistently opposed the establishment, obviously, of the new agency and authority for a number of reasons. We're indicating there that the establishment of the BMA, obviously, is a priority to address multiple challenges in the management of our country's borders. And that government spent 6 months deliberating on the BMA bill at the NEDLAC process and held 4 separate bilaterals with BUSA itself. The final NEDLAC report on the bill only recommended 3 areas of disagreement, and this was not one of them. So this matter has been dealt with sufficiently during the NEDLAC process. The other issue that was raised was about the funding, etc., and the SAAS report, the Socioeconomic Impact Assessment Report. What we've indicated here is obviously the SAAS report, it was also, it was done, it was considered by Cabinet, and they made a recommendation that they should we should proceed with the bill in the form that it is. And obviously the issue about funding and stuff, it will obviously be clarified before the bill is finalized or implemented in the sense of where the funding is going to come from, because as we see it will come from different departments, etc. Where there's funding there for a specific and there's a transfer of functions, the funding will follow the functions. The other issue that was raised is that there's key challenges in the bill that purports to resolve and relate to the movement of people rather than the movement of goods itself. And then BUSA acknowledged that there are serious challenges relating to the illicit movement of goods measures, and that there are measures to combat illicit trade should not be at the expense of efforts to facilitate legitimate trade. And what we're indicating there is that obviously the BMA will give effect to a basket of border law enforcement functions covering the movement of persons as well as goods. And obviously by improving and streamlining the management of border law enforcement, the BMA will directly support trade facilitation in this regard. So, and a key problem that we picked up in the border management is the current fragmentation that is at the various border law enforcement functions. And obviously this has contributed to a myriad of problems. It includes corruption, non-alignment of operations by individual organs of state. There are different standard operating procedures at the borders, and there's also different conditions of service between officials at ports of entry, etc. So we have a view that the bill will be informed by an integrated border management approach, which will ensure then a seamless command and control management in the border environment for persons and goods. And government is obviously of the view that the current coordination has failed to secure the country's borders, where silo activities of the departments have contributed to the problems in the border environment. So we're trying to streamline all the processes in this regard. We also received comments from the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council in this regard, where the trade union's position was that the BMA should be located within the public service. The trade unions were also against the creation of unaccountable agencies, etc., and the outsourcing of government functions was a problem for them. They said that we need to prohibit the outsourcing of government functions, and that those not be extended to all functions of the BMA. What happened in this regard, Chair, is that government during the NEDLAC process made a number of compromises during that process to address the concerns that were mentioned by Labour. One of the key concessions that included the provision that requires the BMA to undertake collective bargaining within the PSCBC, that has been written in the bill, and it forms part of the specific bill. That was something that we did include. The other issue that addressed the concern of Labour that the BMA would be diluting organised labour, organised bargaining power of labour. So that is something that was addressed during the NEDLAC processes with labour in this regard, Chair. I don't know if we should go to the specific provision in the bill, Chair. Where are we talking? Clause 4 of the bill. But we'll also come back to the issue of exclusively, and I'll get to that now because it touches on that when we get to the Lawyers for Human Rights now as well, Chair. Lawyers for Human Rights also commented on this bill, and they said that there was no costing attached to the bill, etc. And what I've already explained, that the issue about the Sayers report was there. It was sent through to the Cabinet in this regard. They had a look at it, etc. So what will happen is when the bill is, and as I said, the functions that will be performed within the BMA, those funds will come from the different departments when those specific functions are transferred in terms of the Section 97 proclamation that will be prepared, Chair. Another thing that was raised by the Lawyers for Human Rights was the issue about that the government currently has the white paper on international migration that suggests the establishment of detention centres along the borders and how...
I want you to repeat what you just said now, that funds will come from... The question is, what is the estimate cost? You see, now, the functions that are performed by different departments, there is no law enforcement, BMA law enforcement agency. So that money is nowhere. I just want you to repeat what you just said now so that I'm clear what you're saying about what you're saying.
Thanks, Chair. So what will happen is, as soon as a transfer of functions takes place, if functions were performed within certain areas, say for instance trade and industry, etc., those officials, the functions that are performed will now be performed in the BMA area. Those funds that will be available will be transferred to the BMA in order to give effect. So it's not a whole new bank. It's wherever the functions are being shifted, the funds will have to follow the functions. That's what I'm trying to say. And the other issue was that when we looked at the issue of the, on page 4, Chair, of the presentation, there's also inputs that were made of, there was a GTAC report that indicated that the National Treasury undertook a detailed study of the public expenditure in the border environment, and the estimates at that point was that it was about 3.8 billion rand. So in 16-17, there was also additional work that was undertaken relating to the cost of establishing the BMA, and obviously these estimates were divided into various phases. So obviously the BMA will be brought into operation in incremental phases, And what that happened there is that the latest projections that we received was that the BMA will require about 10.5 billion in the year 2032. And this formed part of the sales report that was sent through. Thanks, Chair. Just on the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, again, Chair, on page 5 of the presentation, I've already addressed that organized labor. Sorry, let me go to page 6. We've dealt with that, the Lawyers for Human Rights. The last where I was on the white paper on migration, Chair. And what we indicated, the white paper on international migration obviously is a policy document, and the BMA is not, and it will also not be, a policy maker. That policy document has to be dealt with the relevant department that makes the policy. The BMA will only be an implementer of the policy that's taken, so it's two different processes. So as soon as the Immigration Act is reviewed based on the migration policy, that will then obviously influence, and see, the Immigration Act will then be amended in line with what the policy dictates. Chair, if we go to the next presentation that we received, representations, Nehau, they also indicated that in all our engagements with government officials and in the bilateral meetings which they had also with the minister, they made it very clear that they opposed to the hollowing of state capacity through the creation of unaccountable agencies and the outsourcing of government functions. Basically, what we said in the BMA will be a state entity under the Public Finance Management Act, and there will be no hollowing of state resources, so there is accountability, and you have to comply with the PFMA in this regard as well. We furthermore, there was a detailed BMA business case that was undertaken. It also assessed the advantages and the disadvantages of various state institutional forms, and obviously the preference for establishing the BMA as a national state entity, it was adopted by Cabinet for the following reasons that we've made. It offers a potential solution to governance and accountability arrangements. It's a single executive authority is provided for, and the oversight is performed then by Parliament. The public entity could have a designated security and law enforcement status, and then some obviously of the staff that will migrate into the BMA will move from an existing public entity rather than from a public entity to a government department. We also said that a coordinated border management has failed since 1994. Obviously to effectively secure the country's borders, and the central problem in this regard is the lack of a single command and control structure in the border environment, and the consequences of the coordinated model include the following. It happened that there was non-aligned and often poor border control-related service delivery, ineffective facilitation of the movement of persons and goods. It compromised joint efforts and outcomes resulting from different risk management tools and approaches. It was an ineffective utilization of public resources due to limited information sharing. It was also an inability to enforce a standard approach in dealing with border law enforcement transgressions. It was also a higher volume of illegal goods that were entering the country. Corruption and organized crime was thriving in a fragmented management environment, and an increase of undocumented foreign nationals within the country. We also noted that. And then also, obviously, because of the solarism with agencies that was focusing on their own mandate. So, obviously informed by all the above reasons, Cabinet then decided to establish the BMA based on an integrated border management approach. The government demonstrated overwhelming goodwill in the NEDLAC process. As this was indicated earlier, it was a 6-month process where engagements took place with labor, NEDLAC, etc., and business. And there were a number of concessions that were made that COSATA noted in its submission, and obviously of which Nehau is an affiliate. Chairperson. The next comment that we received was from COSATU, and they indicated that their remaining areas of concern based was the location of the BMA and the call to ban all outsourcing. Now, COSATU's position has been that the BMA must be located within the public service and that this is non-negotiable for the union. So we responded to this. Government has responded to this. It was acknowledged, by renaming it from an agency to an authority and locating it within the broader public sector and the PFMA. So those were some of the concessions that were made during the NEDLAC process. So what we said is, as our response is, that the outsourcing of border law enforcement is a non-issue, obviously, for the proposed BMA. We're not going to outsource. And this is where the whole issue about the word exclusively comes in chair, and we'll deliberate on that a bit more. The word exclusively came in precisely because of this specific issue that's raised here. So firstly, what we're saying is that the BMA will be a full state entity accountable to Parliament via the Minister of Home Affairs. Secondly, we say, stating that the bill makes provision that collective bargaining of the BMA will take place in the Public Sector Coordinating Bargaining Council, the PSCBC. And thirdly, we state that clause 4.2 states that the border law enforcement functions will be performed, you see, Chen, this is where the word comes in, exclusively by officers of the BMA. You see, so that's where the word exclusively comes, following engagements with COSATU on the matter. So we just wanted to bring that to chairperson and the committee members' attention as to how this came about. It wasn't there initially in the bill, and then it came in through the NEDLAC process. The word exclusively. So the exclusively there specifically speaks to the border law enforcement function. In other words, the functions performed within the border law enforcement area itself, not other places. And as I indicated last meeting, Chair, your implementation protocols would allow it. It's not at all. The police stations, for instance, that in the border law enforcement area will remain there. They'll still perform their functions. It doesn't take away the classical policing functions of SAPS. But we can discuss that when we get to Section 5D of the bill. But this is how the word exclusively came about and how it was introduced in the bill. So, Chair, I just wanted to...
You know how the committee concluded on that, because I think that was the bone of contention for SAPS. SAPS was not mentioned anywhere, and you come up with this. But it's fine. Let me allow you to... We're noting that, because the committee took a position on that. I hear you are presenting the same thing you did before, but we took a position.
What I just want to add to that is we did have a meeting with the Parliamentary Legal Advisor on this. There is a draft that's suggested in the regard, depending on what the committee decides. We know what the decision was last time to remove the word exclusively. So there is a draft in the report already there. We had the meetings with the law advisors. But I just felt I had to also bring this to the attention of the committee so that we just, based on what Chairperson mentioned earlier this morning. So, thanks. Thanks, Chair. Chair, we got to say that COSATU also felt that the fragmentation, the weakening of the state, and they encouraged the other departments also to follow suit in this regard, as I say. But we indicating that the locating the BMA outside of the public service, that was informed by multiple considerations as outlined in the government's response to Nahawu's comments. The issue of salary harmonization obviously will be a long-term project within the BMA, and it will be guided by fiscal considerations, obviously, because there has to be discussions with the Minister of Finance in this regard. It's not it's an administrative issue that will be dealt with as and when it arises. The President is also required to consult with the Minister of Finance, as I've indicated here, in determining the salary structure of the BMA. So there's checks and balances in place when the issue of salaries, etc., is negotiated. COSATU's concern of the BMA that potentially fragmenting the state and also the power of labour and collective bargaining, it was addressed through the following clauses welcomed by COSATU in the NEDLAC process. The first one is the provision that border law enforcement functions will be an exclusive BMA function, which I just addressed and spoke to our chair. And then the B is the insertion of the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council clause that said that there will be collective bargaining when it comes to service of the BMA officials. Chair, if I can turn to information security studies, they also provided inputs regarding the securitization of the border zones. They indicated that the proposed BMA, once under the direction of the Minister of Home Affairs, will obviously effectively be an additional or auxiliary police service, which lends itself to the creation of over-securitized zones within the Republic. And what we indicated there, if one has regard to Section 1993 of the Constitution, it permits the establishment of an armed organizations or services. It says it may be established in terms of the Constitution, and this is precisely what's happening with the BMA. because your officers in the BMA must also be able to, you, if you're an armed service, you can have arms on you, etc., your weapons and stuff like that. If you're not an armed service, you can't. So within the BMA, because your officers will have to perform that specific functions, that is why Section 1993 allows you to do that, and that's how it's been established. They also further indicated that your Section 4.2 restricts border law enforcement functions exclusively to the BMA, and that the committee should also consider including here that the BMA must cooperate and coordinate with other organs of state on its border law enforcement function. Now, what I want to indicate, Chair, if you look at Section 4.2, that specifically is, what they're suggesting is specifically what is catered for in the bill. If you look at 3B and 5D of the bill, it makes provision for coordination and cooperation with other organs of state. And if I look at 5D, it says the functions of the authority are to cooperate and coordinate its border law enforcement functions with other organs of state, border communities, or any other person. So that has, what they requesting us to do has already been catered for in the bill. It is there. Chair, if we move to Clause 5 of the bill, dealing with the functions of the authority, BUSA made comments regarding certain things that, well, they mentioned here. BUSA is concerned that the proposed BMA will not have the necessary financial and human resources to facilitate the movement of legitimate goods. So what's indicated is obviously that the comments of BUSA supports the current view of government that the tools of trade are not equitably distributed or spread amongst existing organs of state in the border environment. The BMA, as the single border law enforcement entity in South Africa, is obviously the solution to this problem. And the BMA will then be established in an incremental manner, as I've indicated earlier, and that would minimize and mitigate the potential challenge of disrupting existing border control functions. So it's not going to be one big bang. It will happen in incremental stages. And the President can also bring certain sections of an act into operation in different stages. They also made inputs on the absorption of functions, and they said that they've reviewed that the DHA has underestimated the logistical, financial, and legal difficulties in absorbing the various law enforcement-related functions of the BMA. They said whilst the BMA is understood to be an implementing authority, many of the functions which the BMA is envisioned to perform are captured in legislation where no distinction is made between enforcement and the border area, etc., that they're mentioning. And what we've indicated there, and this is the advice that we also received from the state law advisors, is government has taken extensive legal advice on how to address the transfer of these legal mandates to the BMA. And the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor has supported the view that obviously the presidential proclamation in terms of Section 97 of the Constitution will be utilized as the legal mechanism to transfer these functions to the BMA. On page 13, ISS also made inputs regarding why the BMA will speak of the role of the BMA in facilitating revenue collection. They mentioned certain things there. The point that NASDAQ, the Treasury and the South African SARS made was as repeatedly raised before the parliamentary as a concern. We have indicated that there's no doubt, and this has got to do, but we settled that, but let me just, we discussed it last time. Revenue collection is not going to happen, as DG indicated, at ports of entry. Not at all. We're facilitating the management of that revenue. So currently, what we indicate is no direct collection of revenue at any ports of entry. It's a compliance and monitoring enforcement to check if the goods that at the port correspond with the ones that have already declared beforehand. As DG indicated, like, these things happen before the goods come to the country already. Payments are made, etc., as he indicated it. So what we do is just checks and balances that are in place in order to ensure that the goods that are there meets the funds that have been paid. And obviously there will have to be collaboration between the relevant entities in this regard relating to revenue, well, we say revenue collection. They will have to, we will not be, or the BMA will not be collecting revenue in any sense. Chair, if you look at Clause 6 of the bill, the composition of the authority, we didn't receive any comments in that regard. Clause 7, dealing with the appointment of the Commissioner and the Deputy Commissioners, there we received comments from the NEC for Economic Opportunities in the Western Cape, and they refer to Clause 7.2b of the bill. Now, firstly, there is no Clause 7.2b. I just want to make that clear. What we do say is in Clause 7.3 makes it clear that it's the Minister that appoints the Acting Commissioner, because they dealt here with Where there's a vacancy in the office of the commissioner, the president must appoint a person as the acting commissioner. And that means that after an initial appointment, the incumbent will only ever hold office in an acting capacity. It's wrong, Chair. If you look at Clause 7.3 of the bill, it says if the commissioner is absent or unable to perform the functions of the office of the commissioner is vacant, the minister may designate the deputy commissioner as acting commissioner. So it's not the president that's doing that. So that was just an incorrect quote. And obviously the normal process is there will be an acting, and then obviously there will be advertisements that will go out, and the normal procurement process will then follow after that. Chair, Information for Security Studies also made a comment regarding this clause, and they said that the institutional positioning of the authority, that there's a need for effective oversight and accountability, lines of reporting, and also that the commissioner and deputy commissioners effectively report to the Minister of Home Affairs. Now they said that given that these will be commissioned officers, it's imperative that clarity is provided on how their roles will relate to their service in SAPS. It's two different processes. There's no service in SAPS, Chair. They're not officials within SAPS. The BMA officers, the commissioners, it's not like a commissioner, the national commissioner that is here, etc. This will be a separate entity dealing with it. They're not linked to SAPS. There's a differentiation. So to say that there must be, that it's not on the level of a BMA commissioner, etc. So we're saying there's no link between the Envisaged Commission of the BMA and that of the SAPS Commission. Yes, there will be coordination when it comes to implementation protocols, things, and when there are crimes that are being committed within the border law enforcement area, where SAPS will be called to do the arrest and detention, and there's clauses that deals with that, where will a person be taken to, there will be warrants of arrest, etc., what would that warrant indicate? But you can't equate the two commissioner posts. I don't think they understood precisely what we're doing here. What we're saying is that the commissioner's level will be subject to, obviously, a scientific job evaluation process, and that will determine the actual level of the commissioner and at what level the commissioner will be appointed. Chair, the UNHCR also made comments in this regard, and they recommended that there should be a concerted effort made to ensure that independent and oversight monitoring mechanisms are in place. And what we indicate in this regard is that that is indeed the case. If you look at the BMA, it's always subject to the Constitution. The PFMA is applicable. There's collective bargaining that is included in the bill. The South African Human Rights Commission, for instance, is a Chapter 9 institution, and they've got a constitutional mandate, obviously, over all organs of state in relation to the protection of human rights. So this does not need to be specifically mentioned in the bill. You've got that in other pieces of legislation. You don't state it in the bill specifically. They've got that inherent right already. Chair, if we turn to Clause 8 of the bill, Terms of Office of the Commissioner, and the Deputy Commissioner, here the MEC for Economic Opportunities in the Western Cape Government, just indicated Clause 8.2, we must ensure that the subsequent period referred to in the clause ends before the agreed terms. What we're saying there is that's an operational matter. Obviously these things will be dealt with, it's raised as they come about, and they shall be dealt with once the BMA obviously is established. Chair, if we look at Clause 9, the removal of the Commissioner from the office, and the Deputy Commissioner, we didn't receive any written comments in that regard. Clause 10, which deals with the conditions of service and remuneration of the Commission, Deputy Commissioner, there once again we received two comments from the MEC for Economic Opportunities of the Western Cape Government, referring to Clause 10.1, and said that the President must, after consultation with the Minister, and the Minister determine the remuneration allowances and other benefits of the Commissioner. We've noted the comments that they've made here, and we said that the President is obviously empowered to appoint the Commissioner as well as the Deputy Commissioners, and therefore the determination of remuneration, allowances and other benefits of the Commissioner is a presidential prerogative. Obviously that happens in consultation. There's job evaluation processes that take place, there's collective bargaining that takes place, so all of these issues will also be taken into consideration in determining that structure. So we are of the view that there are checks and balances in place. The Public Service Bargaining Commission, they also indicate that collective bargaining arrangement will be complex to the public service, and there's a need for serious engagement on the issue of collective bargaining as the piece is led by one employer, which is the DPSA. So obviously, if they say there's a need, it's complex, yes, it's complex, but there needs to be further engagement. So we accept their comments, and we also refer to our comments on pages 9 and 10 of the submission to the specific issue. So obviously there will be further engagements. Clause 12, dealing with a delegation by the Commissioner, no comments that we received there that we speak to. Clause 13, relating to the appointment of officials. There your Refugee Legal and Advocacy Centre indicated that they were concerned with the fact that Section 13 makes it mandatory for an official to undergo a security clearance process only. They have the opinion that it's also essential for all prospective employees to undergo an assessment of refugee law and international law, considering the fact that refugees and asylum seekers are victims in need of international protection. What we're saying there, Chair, is to specify specific areas of training. That's an operational matter. So that could be dealt with in terms of the regulations. The Border Guard officers, they would need to undergo training in a wide range of areas. And obviously, as I said, in terms of subsequent regulations that will be issued in terms of the bill, one could consider to indicate or specify specific areas of training as and when the need arises. It should also be noted that this bill was crafted, as we've indicated, as framework legislation. So there was a conscious decision that operational matters, as I indicated at the last meeting as well, Chair, they would not be provided for in the principal legislation. It's your matters of substance that are dealt with in the legislation. Chair, moving to Clause 14, dealing with commissioned officers, we didn't receive comments in that specific regard from any role players. Clause 15, Chair, duties, functions and powers of officers of the Border Guard. The Refugee Law and Advocacy Centre indicated here that they were pleased with the fact that this section makes mention of the rights and interests of vulnerable groups, including refugees and asylum seekers. So we've noted the comments regarding this, and we must also note that, you know, our comments relating to the preamble where it was indicated that we didn't specifically mention this, there's a distinct, remember that you've got your Refugees Act and your Immigration Act that already deals with these specific issues. Those are the policy areas. It will be focused on border law enforcement functions, the BMA bill, emanating from several pieces of legislation, which would include your Immigration Act and your Refugees Act. On page 19, LHR, they also indicated that they satisfied to see that the provision under section 15.3, which is actually clause 15.3 of the bill, which specifically requires office to exercise his or her powers in a manner that takes due regard of fundamental rights, etc. We're referring to our comments, obviously, that we made under clause 13 earlier, and we also indicated that training is an operational matter. It could be a wide range of training that needs to take place, and this will be dealt with in the specific regulations, because they go on that they recommend the inclusion of a specific provision relating to training of all BMA officers. Chair, the UNHCR also made comments on clause 15. That's on page 20 of the presentation, where they indicate that under the draft BMA bill at the present, the functions and tasks of it do not explicitly include the protection of fundamental rights, including the rights of asylum. So we've noted the comment, but we refer back to our comments earlier, and we also indicate that clause 15.3 of the bill ensures that when performing border law enforcement functions, the officers must make due regard, obviously, to the fundamental rights of persons, rights and interests of vulnerable groups, etc. So that is in the legislation already. And remember, your Promotion of Administrative Justice Act is a constitutionally mandated piece of legislation. You have to comply with that piece of legislation as well, and obviously the Constitution itself. ISS requested clarity on the position of BMA officers will be in relation to law enforcement, i.e. if you look at the Immigration Act and Refugees Act. Are we saying that the powers and functions in this relation of the relating to the Immigration Act, etc., that will be delegated to the BMA? In terms of the section, as we indicated earlier, there will be a delegation that takes place of the relevant powers and functions that should be afforded to BMA officers to perform their functions within the border law enforcement area. Chair, clause 16, it's the public service coordinator bargaining council. We've already dealt with this earlier, so I'm going to go over that. Clause 17 deals with the limitation of rights on page 21. Busa here indicated that they're concerned about the implications of both, obviously, section 17A and 17C. We've noted the concerns of Busa, and what we indicated that they were dealt with during the NEDLAC process. And also during the portfolio committee, when we were in the portfolio committee, they were also dealt with there. The bill in itself focuses on the officials of the BMA and not on the general public. If you look at the example that was used here, it speaks to SAPS and a private individual. If one has regard to clause 17 of the bill, which deals with limitation of rights, it says, subject to the Constitution, officers may, from time to time and to the extent needed for purposes of border and safety or such of it, be subjected. So it's officers of the BMA, not the general public. So I just think they misinterpreted it. It's your officials that form part of the BMA that they need to. And this is part of this information you got from legislation that's currently already in operation. So it's not something that we're thinking out of there. We already have this on the statute book. So, and obviously we believe that the grounds for limitation of rights provided for in the schools, they're reasonable and justifiable, and it's specific enough in, as to when it can be done, why it must be done, etc. Chair, if I can move to clause 18 of the bill. Powers of entry, search and seizure, arrest and detention. Here we had the Refugee Legal and Advocacy Centre indicating that they're in agreement with the bulk of the provisions, but that they were concerned with the fact that the section empowers an official to arrest and detain a person of certain goods, but does not oblige the officer to promptly inform the arrested persons of his or her rights in terms of section 35 of the Constitution, etc. Chair, and in this regard, we're indicating that the DMA will obviously be subject to the Constitution of the Supreme Court, and therefore it has to conform to the provisions of section 35 of the Constitution. Furthermore, if I can refer the committee to clause 21(1) of the bill, that specific clause specifically speaks to arrested and detained persons and seized goods, and it also specifically states that this is subject to section 35 of the Constitution. So what they're stating in their comments, that it should be the rights in terms of section 35 of the Constitution has been catered for in section 21(1). If you read that, read it for the committee. It says, if an officer arrests or detains a person with or without a warrant, that officer must, as soon as revoked, subject to section 35 of the Constitution, bring that person to a police station under control of SAPS, etc., etc. So it is already catered for in the legislation. Chair, if I can move to information security studies, they also made a comment on section 18, which indicated generally on section 8 the powers of arrest, seizure, search, seizure, arrest and detention. They said it's important that it's made clear that this relates to the commission of offences, not a broad interpretation of the scope of arrest. What he's saying, the arrest is always obviously in relation to a specific offence and cannot be for anything else. So, and we obviously, the law enforcement, if an act says that this is what needs to be an arrest, can be effected in A, B, C, D, that's when the arrest will be effected. Obviously with due regard to section 35 of the Constitution. They're also referring to clause 18(1), where it says, if you look at clause 18(1) of the bill, it indicates that an officer may, with or without a warrant, within the border law enforcement area at a port of entry, do certain things. Now they're saying that all without a warrant should be removed, as section 18(2) provides for the instances in which an officer may perform this function without a warrant. Chair, it's a wrong interpretation. If you look at section 18(2), 18(1) says an officer may, with or without a warrant, do the following things. If you go to 18(2), it says an officer may, without a warrant, exercise the power in terms of section 1 if that person is competent to do so and consents to it, or if the officer on reasonable grounds believes that a warrant will be issued if applied for, and the delay in obtaining it will frustrate or defeat the objects of such an arrest. So those are the checks and balances that are in place that you need to meet before you... So you can't take away without a warrant the word in subclause 2. It gives effect to when you can do it without a warrant. Chair, if I can move to clause 19, routine searches and seizures, is where Busa made certain inputs. And they said that they disagreed with section 19 and proposed that the same test applied to section 18 should also be applied in relation to routine searches. So what we're saying is that these routine searches will include into roadblocks within the border law enforcement area. And the mandate to perform those routine searches is fundamental to the BMA's mandate. And we even indicating that these routine searches are currently being conducted as we speak, where they say that at ports of entry, and they're obviously yielding positive results. If you look at Ortia, where these routine searches are done there. Obviously, there are checks and balances that were brought in. There's a letter. The commissioner will know that these routine searches are going to take place. He will approve it, etc. So it's not somebody that thinks of this out of thin air and say, I'm doing it now, etc. It will be a regulated process at the end of the day. Chair, we move to page 26. Clause 20, there was relating to powers relating to vessels within the maritime borders. There were no comments that we received there. On clause 21, arrested or detained persons and seized goods. The Refugee Law and Advocacy Center indicated section 21.1. They recommended that in the event of an arrested person being an asylum seeker who has indicated an intention to apply for asylum, the officials also transport that said person to the nearest refugee reception nearest refugee reception center. So what we're indicating, obviously any assistance to asylum seekers, that will be done with in line with the Refugees Act, because that's the policy, that's a specific act that relates and pertains to refugees. The person will enter there, and from there, that's where the cooperation and collaboration will take place and say, there's a person that's applied, this is the intention being made clear, and then it will be taken over by Home Affairs. ISS also made comments in this regard. They said that the bill outlines the process for the detention and arrest of individuals in section 22.1. Chair, first of all, we just want to indicate there's no clause 22.1. You've only got it, and clause 22 of the bill deals with the funds of the authority, not what is being mentioned here. Well, they go on for what it's worth, that the clause states that an officer detains or arrests a person, the officer must then, as soon as reasonably possible, bring that person to a police station under control of the police service, or if a warrant expressly stipulates another place, bring that person to that place. So the reference, obviously, I've indicated 22 is incorrect, but it must be noted that this clause is subject to section 35 of the Constitution, as I've already indicated, and furthermore, as indicated during the last meeting we had, that warrants are issued by courts and a presiding officer based on information that's provided to them. So obviously, once one gives effect to that warrant, it is because it went through a court of law and issued the warrant. ISS also on 21.1, they said to avoid the possibility of abuse in respect of places of detention, arrested people should only be detained at stations under the control of SAPS. And once again, the same comment, they said, a warrant of arrest is issued at the discretion of a presiding officer of the court of law, and it may include a place at which a person may be detained. If you look, for instance, in terms of the Immigration Act, there's also other places of detention that's declared by the Director General. And if the court so wishes, that person can be detained there for purposes of deportation. So there are a myriad of reasons why that went. But it will have to be sanctioned, obviously, by the presiding officer of a court of law that issues that warrant at the end of the day. LHR indicated that they noted with concern that the detention provision under section 21 of the bill, what we're indicating there, that there are checks and balances in place and the BMA will be bound by the provisions of the Constitution, obviously, as well as relevant jurisprudence that we have in addition to what is mentioned above under clause 18 that we've already indicated. In this regard, we can just check pages 22 to 23. We've already made comments in this regard. So if we look at clause 22 of the bill dealing with the funds of the authority, the MEC for the Economic Opportunities for the Western Cape Government said that there's no obligation that's placed on an officer who seizes goods to provide the person from whom the goods are seized with a receipt for the goods, etc. We've noted that, but the submission relates to operational matters. As I indicated, operational matters will obviously be dealt with regulations, etc. There are other pieces of relevant legislation, such as the Customs and Excise Act, will also guide the issuance of a receipt for the goods seized, which will obviously be in line with the relevant legislation. Clause 23 on immovable property, Chair, no comments that we received there. The same with clause 24 on the Interministerial Consultative Committee. When we move to clause 25, the Border Technical Committee, the Western Cape Government, that's the MEC for Economic Opportunities there, requested clarity. It's not per se on the bill, they just requested whether the envisaged Border Technical will include the heads of provincial departments of economic development. And what we indicated is obviously that committee, it's envisaged to comprise of accounting officers of the relevant national organs of state. But obviously, if there's a need that relevant provincial or municipal accounting officers may be requested to attend these meetings as and when required. So it will be on a case-by-case basis, depending on what is being discussed, etc. Chair, looking at clause 26, the advisory committees, once again, economic development in Western Cape indicated clarity again, whether those border technicians would include the heads of provincial, it's the same comment as I made earlier, Chair. The minister obviously will determine how the members of the advisory committees obviously will be remunerated on their question as to how the remuneration of those members will take place. Clause 27, dealing with implementation protocols, Rabusa made a comment to say that they're concerned that other organs of state may continue to undertake duplicate inspections once a cargo has been moved from the border law enforcement area. What should be noted here is that, and it should be borne in mind, that the BMA will obviously be responsible for its functions within the border law enforcement area. Outside of the border law enforcement area, the BMA will not have any mandate, as this will fall within the functional jurisdiction of the relevant organ of state. So for instance, if a truck leaves the BMA, the border law enforcement area, and it moves inland, etc., and it is stopped again by SARS or Customs, etc., that can be done. We don't have any jurisdiction in that regard. The jurisdiction is in the border law enforcement area. I think what Busa raised in this regard, it's got an impact if we stop it more than once, etc., but that's having checks and balances in place and making sure that whatever comes through our borders is accounted for. The Western Cape government, again, Chair, requested how will the remuneration of the members of the advisory committees be determined. I've already discussed that earlier above with clause 28. It does not deal with the implementation protocol, but by the delegation of the minister. They also indicated that clause 28.1b empowers the authority to enter into protocols with principal organs of state located at national government level. Chair, I just want to correct this. There is no clause 28.1b in the bill. So once again, it's an inquiry. There's only 28.1 and 2, and then there's 3, A, B, C, and D. So that's also not... So they're actually referring to clause 27 relating to the implementation protocols, but that's also not what the implementation protocols provide for that specific section. It says there, where the implementation of a policy, the exercise of a statutory power, the performance of a statutory function, or the provision of a service relating to border law enforcement functions by the authority depends on the participation of other organs of state. The authority and those organs of state must coordinate their actions in such a manner as may be appropriate or required in the circumstances by entering into an implementation protocol in accordance with Section 35 of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. So I don't know where they get this located at national government level, entering into with principal organs of state located at national government level. That's not what 28.1b, for instance, states there, the wording. They go on to indicate that it's not clear what the rationale for clause 28.1 is when the executive authority of each of the affected departments is represented by an interministerial consultative committee. Once again, it's just an incorrect reference there because it's on 27. And we're saying that the Interministerial Consultative Committee is a policy consultative forum of ministers, whereas the implementation protocol, that is a formal agreement between accounting officers giving effect to the execution of functions and policies. Chair, if I can turn to clause 28 of the bill, delegation by the minister, the MEC for Economic Opportunities, Western Cape Government, indicated there that the implementation protocols may be entered into between organs of state and different governments, and they refer to clause 28.1b again. I've already actually alluded to that. The provision for the implementation protocols, that will enable the BMA to enter into an agreement with any organ of state at any sphere of government, insofar as it is permitted by the bill and the mandates of any other organs of state. But clause 28 does not deal with implementation protocols. That's clause 27, and I just think that they've made an incorrect reference there. If we turn to clause 29, Chair, review or appeal of decisions. The Refugee Law and Advocacy Clinic or Centre indicated that they welcome the provisions of that specific section. They did, however, say that the section is missing a crucial element, which is one of the cornerstones of administrative law. And it says that the section merely makes mention of a decision to the exclusion of an action of an officer. What we're saying there is, obviously, and I mentioned it earlier, Chair, the BMA is bound and will always be bound by the administrative justice principles that are enunciated in the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. That's a constitutionally mandated piece of legislation, and it will always be subject to PAJA. That's the abbreviation I use. Busa on this regard indicated that they believe that written reasons for the decision should be provided and should meet, that it should meet certain criteria, and they mentioned the criteria there. Now, the BMA, as I indicated just now, is, it will be bound by the administrative justice principles enumerated in the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. You'll always have to comply with it and provide written reasons. But even if we turn to Clause 29, Chair, if we just read that, let's look at Clause 29.1. Any decision made by an officer in terms of this Act that materially and adversely affects the rights of any person must be communicated to that person in the prescribed manner, so the regulations will indicate how that's done, and must be accompanied by written reasons. So what's been stated here is, it's in the bill, there will be written reasons that will be given to that. The business then on page 34, they indeed proposed that there must be a section on appeals, or the section of appeals must be amended to include an independent appeal body. We have the view, if you look at Clause 29 of the bill, it sufficiently provides for checks and balances and a review and appeal procedures where the ministers involved, the commissioners involved, the ministers involved. So there are, in terms of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, you have to have internal remedies that are available to you before they can go ahead and bring judicial review of specific matters. So those are there. We built them in as required in terms of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. If you want to go further than or beyond that, what you have to do is you have to bring an application. Chair, we can move to page 38 because everything that I've addressed to now is dealt with. Page 38 of this bill deals with the Western Cape government also provided or requested clarity on why provision is made for two levels of appeal. And I've explained this to say that this is just in line with the provisions of the Promotion of the Administrative Justice Act, that there must be internal remedies that are available to people, and they must first be exhausted before the courts can be approached. Looking at Clause 30, Chair, that sports points or places of entry or exit with the approval of the Minister, there once again the Western Cape Government requested their clarity as to why the provision is made for two levels of appeal. I've just indicated it. That why we've got those two levels of appeal. Looking at Clause 31, 32 and 33, Chair, respectively dealing with the annual report, the exemption from payment of fees or tolls and confidentiality. We didn't receive any comments there. Clause 34, liability. We just received comment there from the Western Cape government in this regard, and I wanted to know what is meant by an authorised official. And obviously we're saying that an authorised official relates to that official of the BMA that has so been authorised to use the vehicle. So if there's a vehicle, you're authorised, there will be authority trips. Those are the operational issues. There will be authority trip that has been completed, so you'll be able to get all that information if one needs that. Looking at Clause 35 and 36, Chair, dealing with offences and penalties and the regulations, we didn't receive any comments there. 37, dealing with the transfer of employees from an organ of state to the authority. The Public Service Commission indicated that the bill is not clear under which legislation employees will be transferred. Obviously, we're saying that obviously will be negotiated process within the relevant bargaining council, for example, the PSCBC, in line with the relevant labour legislation. And as Chair will recall, that's one of the issues that we discussed in the NEDLAC process where that collective bargaining, etc., was brought into the bill where it was indicated that that will happen. Chair, clauses 38, 39 and 40 dealing with assets, liabilities and funds, ports, points and places of entry or exit, and then recognized trade unions. We didn't receive any comments there, and neither did we receive any comments on clause 41, which deals with a short title and commencement. Chair, then from page 39 onwards, it's general comments that were made. It's not on the bill itself, etc. I can actually stop here. I see my hour is basically done, so I've tried to stick to the time. These are operational matters, etc., and a lot of these issues that I mentioned have already been addressed in the earlier comments that I've made, Chair. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
He is leaving out the general comments. All members. Part of the comments of the issues that are raised there on the general comments is a 10-kilometer zone. How do you... Will there be boundaries? how do you know where does the 10 kilometer end? I think some of these general comments are important issues. Can we give you 15 minutes just to run through?
Sure. Thanks, Chairperson. If we look at what Mr. Matlala indicated, the bill must include the regulation and movement of asylum seekers and any other foreign nationals. That's an operational matter, and also dealt with in terms of the relevant pieces of legislation, i.e. Refugees Act, Immigration Act, etc. If we look at the PSCBC, where they indicate that Labour shares government's concerns on the state of the border, customs and migration management, that's on page 40, and they remain opposed to locating the VMA outside of the public service. It needs to remain within the public. We've indicated, I've discussed that earlier, as I've indicated, Chair, so I'm not going to deal with that then in detail. The LHR, if we look at them, they raise three issues that they feel that is missing from the bill: the detention provision, which is not, that does not appear to be in line with the Constitutional Court, that ensures a rights-based approach to immigration and refugee protection, and also the oversight and accountability issues. What we've indicated here is obviously that items 1 and 2 that they've mentioned there does not fall within the scope of the BMA, and they were dealt with under the Immigration Act and the Refugees Act. And if you look at oversight and accountability, that's dealt with extensively in the book. You've got your Public Finance Management Act, there are checks and balances, PAJA is involved, the Constitution, everything's obviously subject to the Constitution. You've got your Human Rights Commission that can do oversight as a Chapter 9 institution, etc. They've also indicated that the bill should clearly outline interaction between various pieces of legislation, particularly those which be applied within the 10-kilometer zone. What we've indicated is the functions of that will be transferred by the presidential proclamation in terms of Section 97 of the Constitution, and obviously the implementation protocols will come into play in this regard. So, as I've indicated earlier, you've got the 10-kilometer radius or in that near vicinity. Now, what you're saying that if there's some kind of hot pursuit that's taking place, if we're assisting with, say, for instance, SAPS, etc., there is something that is going through the border law enforcement area, the person just crosses, does it mean we need to stop? One can't do anything with it, especially if you're still waiting for assistance or whatever the case may be. So, as I indicated, that specific area, whether it's a kilometre or 2 kilometres outside the 10 kilometres, will be determined by the specific circumstances that prevails at that point in time. If people are grieved as to how it happened, what happened, obviously there are processes and procedures in terms of how a decision was taken to do this, and they'll be able to go to court on these matters, etc. The Constitution allows that, PAJA allows that, etc. So there are checks and balances in place that to make sure and ensure that people do not overplay the powers that they have in terms of the specific area that we're mentioning there. That you don't go 60, 70, 80, 100, 200 kilometres in or whatever the case may be as a BMA official. Chair, there was also a comment that says that the bill fails to mention its relationship with the Refugees Act. We've mentioned this on page 2. Our comments is there. It's page 2 of this document. We also mentioned that we spoke to the issues of the recommendations that's contained in the White Paper on International Migration. That will obviously be given effect to when we review the Immigration Act in this regard, as well as the Refugees Act. As legislation that's being administered by the relevant department in that regard. The bill cannot deal with matters as indicated here because they fall outside of the scope of the BMA. Oversight and accountability, Chair, we've dealt with this. LHR raised this. They note with concern the lack of independent oversight and accountability. But we're saying that the bill provides a sufficient oversight. There's an interministerial consultative committee. There's a border technical committee. In addition, Parliament is also there to perform oversight. You've also got your Chapter 9 institutions in this regard, South African Human Rights Commission, etc. Chair, if we go to page 44, still with LHR and the conclusions, where they said that they support the creation of a coordinated border management system, but they note that the legislative is at times, legislature, is at times vague where it comes to the most fundamental rights, the rights of arrest and detention, etc. And what we've indicated there is that the bill is informed by the integrated border management approach. Government is of the view that the coordinated border management model, obviously that's failed as I've indicated earlier. So you want one command and control structure, one reporting line, etc. and this has been going on for the last 20 years. The legislature, they said, should also not see, did not see the process of goods and collection of duties and taxes at the border in the same light as the processing of people. What we're saying is the bill adequately deals with the facilitation of movement of people and goods, obviously as a core principle of integrated border management. UNHCR also made comments, but they talked about the white paper, and that they recommended that it would be important to align the policy and the legislation review. We agree with that, but BMA is not a policy maker. That will be taken into consideration when doing the Refugees Amendment Bill, the Refugees Act, and the Immigration Act, the reviews there. The DHA would retain the policy-making mandate in that regard. And there's no misalignment between the bill and the white paper on international migration. The UNHCR also recommended the draft law should be amended to include provision procedure to incorporate safeguards to guarantee persons seeking international protection, etc. I dealt with that earlier. Those are issues that fall within the Refugees Act, the Immigration Act, etc. And obviously there will be the implementation protocols as how that when you facilitate the movement of a person, if you look at Section 23 of the Immigration Act, which talks about asylum transit permit, there will be a permit that will be issued by the BMA office that will allow that person to transit through the area, and then Home Affairs will take over from there. UNHCR strongly recommends that the draft BMA bill should be redrafted. They said in order to ensure that the obligation of the BMA and border management in this regard principles and the principle of non-refoulement is clarified and clearly outlined. Once again, the protection of asylum seekers, it's sufficiently dealt with in the Refugees Act, and the BMA will be responsible for the initial processing of the entry of any person seeking to enter, including asylum seekers, and as I've indicated, they will then be transferred to Home Affairs to assist the cooperation that needs to take place. Chair, the UNHCR, it also clearly defines the roles of government departments. We've dealt with that, the presidential proclamation in terms of Section 97, that will provide clarity in this regard and how the functions will be transferred. Also, the issue there, in order to ensure the proper expertise and experience of the BMA officials, the UNHCR recommends further input to UNHCR key stakeholders should be sought into the border law enforcement officials. It deals with the training issue, Chair. And obviously that will take place. They will be taken on board when it comes to training and stuff like that. If they've got inputs to make, one would then engage them. Chair, I've already dealt with the BUSA issues, the NEDLAC. We can go to page 47. Once again, we've already talked about this issue about the promotion of legitimate trade and migration. Mebusa said it's going to frustrate legitimate trade. Our view is it's going to enhance it at the end of the day, is our view. Business also believes that the risk of a negative impact on legitimate is high, given the fact that the process of implementing the new Customs Act has only just begun. And what we're saying is that the BMA will implement all the relevant border law enforcement policies and legislation mandates of government, so of all the different government departments as well, including the new customs legislation when it comes into operation. And obviously this will be done in close collaboration with SARS in this regard. That's why you've got the implementation protocols and how this is going to happen. And the Act lays that in terms of Section 27 or Clause 27. It gives you that authority and legal justification. Chair, we've already dealt with the trade facilitation there. It's again the same thing. Horizontal integration between government departments and departments at ports of entry and exit. What we're indicating there is obviously that relevant national border control officials are envisaged to transfer to the BMA. So vertical integration in this regard, that will be minimized. Border coordination, it has been tried for a period of time. It's not yielded the optimal results. And what we can indicate here, the latest example was the multi-party agreement that was entered into. And in this regard, one can indicate that of the 22 organs of state, only 7 organs of state signed that multi-party agreement. And the idea was there that the implementation and enhanced coordination, it's been very uneven, if not very unsatisfactory, because not everybody's a party. You've got the agreement, but how do you enforce it at the end of the day? The issue about separation between policy formulation and enforcement of is considered problematic, they indicate. The model of separating policy making, implementing in government, that's established one. There are many departments that have policy authority, over separate implementing agencies and entities. And if we look at this, best practice speaks to the appropriate oversight, governance, and the reporting arrangements being in place, and the bill provides for these relevant governance and oversight arrangements. The advice that we received from the Chief State Law Advisors, it was explained how we do the Section 97 transfer. They said that border law enforcement is closely linked to national security, and as such, the bill provides for the BMA to be accountable to Parliament through the Minister of Home Affairs. The drafters of the Constitution, obviously, they provided for exclusive presidential discretion in some of the matters such as Section 97 presidential proclamations and all the envisaged BMA functions that are currently being discharged by different organs of state. So that will be the avenue that we will be using to do the relevant transfers. The decision of government to rearrange the manner in which these functions are discharged should remain a government prerogative, obviously, especially where it relates directly to national security. And still on the Office of the Chief State Law Advisors, the members of the principal legislature may not be required as the relevant powers be undertaken concurrently. Obviously, we said these issues were discussed in NEDLAC, extensively so, and the final report of the parties in NEDLAC, the matter of the transfer of functions was not registered as a formal area of disagreement. Chair, if I can just go to page 50, also on this oversight and comments raised by Busa. As I've indicated, a NEDLAC process was lengthy, and there was an extended period of 6 months that we had discussions with NEDLAC and Busa. The issue of the relationship with the BMA and SARS, it's been clarified on a number of occasions. The teacher was here, etc. The BMA will assume frontline border law enforcement functions, including custom functions. Risk management will then be performed pre-border, at the border and post-border regarding the movement of persons and goods. And the government's view, a cooperation agreement between BMA and SARS on risk management could be instituted without major difficulty. I think the issue that was raised is because you've got two risk management issues, one with SARS and one with the BMA is also going to establish. But once we can have coordination in terms of the implementation protocols, etc., how do the two speak to each other and things like that as well? Chair, that is that. I think I've done my 15 minutes on the comments, the additional comments. Thanks, Chair.
The issues that you said you'll come back to them later when we get to those issues.
Thanks, Chair. The issue was if we can specifically go to Clause 4.2 of the bill. And this relates to the issue relating to the word, use of the word exclusively, as we've... The border law enforcement functions within the border law enforcement area and at ports of entry must be performed, and it says, exclusively by the officers of the authority. As I've indicated in the presentation, the word exclusively, how it came about in the NEDLAC process discussions with Labor, etc., because the idea there was that, or to guard against outsourcing of these specific functions that need to be performed within the border law enforcement area to people other than officers in the BMA. So officers in the BMA, obviously it's defined in the Act and it's clear who these officers are. And we're saying that only those officers must do those. But there is a suggestion, as I've indicated, Chair, that we had a discussion yesterday with the Parliamentary Legal Advisor as well, that if we delete the word exclusively, it still means that it will be formed by the officers of the authority. So I just needed to bring it to the committee's attention as to what happened in the NEDLAC process. So we need to take a decision on there whether we delete it or it remains, following the inputs that was provided. Chair, then the second issue relating to SAFs to perform its constitutional mandate in terms of Section 205(3) of the Constitution. In discussions we had yesterday as well, if you look at Section 5D, which deals with the functions of the authority, it says the functions of the authority are to cooperate, that's not D, and coordinate its border law enforcement functions with other organs of state. Police forms part, is one of the organs of state, just as any other government department is, etc. Border communities or any... So we feel that they're included there, but if the need arises and one feels that in the committee is of the view that one goes down that route, one can say cooperate and coordinate its border law enforcement with the South African Police Services, other organs of state, etc. But SACS is included as an organ of, they are an organ of state already. So I just wanted to put that to the committee, because we had a discussion as legal advisors in this regard, Chair, so I just wanted to mention it. And maybe Adam Sue Ann, maybe she would want to come in to clarify that to Chair as well, it should you wish. Thanks, Chairperson. That's all. Thank you very much, Chief.
No, thank you very much. All members, because of the issue of the minister, we did not have an opportunity to introduce ourselves. I just want to request that those who will speak before they say something, just introduce themselves. I'm not sure whether it depends, is part of this meeting. Is there anyone from the office? Before I give the legal team, did the meeting take place as requested by, not requested, as directed by the committee that go and meet and iron out these issues? Did the meeting take place? I'll open to members, but I just want to, it was also requested that as you do a presentation, indicate that the meeting did take place and what were the outcomes of the meeting, of the meeting, because from the committee side, we said take out exclusively. That is it. Then also from the committee side, you are saying even if you take out exclusively, the meaning will still remain the same. What was the outcome of your meeting with SAPS about that? I hear you meeting with law, parliamentary law advisors, but in the meeting that you were directed to have as government, as the executive, did it take place? The issue of police form part of other organs of the state. I'm not sure. I want to know, did they agree in that meeting where you met? Because in your presentation, what comes out strongly for me, there's a lot of arrests, which is not done by other organs of the state. There's a lot of detentions. There's a lot of law enforcement. What SAP said in that meeting when they were making their presentation, they will want to see a clause. They will come in, I'll allow them to speak, that says SAP will continue doing what they're supposed to do as SAP. They wanted a caption in the case. That is why I was saying earlier, we did not agree that the DG and the commissioner met, because they cannot keep on meeting. There must be a caption in the case which covers both of them. Did you agree in this meeting? Maybe my first question, did the meeting take place? We agreed in that meeting that Home Affairs would coordinate the meeting. Did the meeting take place?
Chair, maybe I'm a bit out of depth for lack of better words here. I'm not sure whether the meeting between the Commission and the DG took place. I was not part of the meeting that did take place, so I'm not sure if that meeting indeed took place. Maybe the Commissioner can also assist us in this regard, because he would know, but not as far as I'm aware, Chair.
I'm not talking about that one. I'm talking about the meeting that the committee directed that go and sit down, clarify, iron out issues that were raised. We said to you, most of the issues that were raising in that meeting were not part of Parliament. You were supposed to resolve them as executive. That's what we said. But we allowed you to go and meet. Go and meet. National Defence was supposed to be part of the meeting. and national treasures was supposed to be part of the meeting. Did that meeting please?
No, Chair, I'm not aware of that meeting table where I was part of a meeting after we were with Chairperson.
It did not take place, Honourable Members. That is why these issues are coming as they were at the time when they came to present. Can I allow the National Commissioner to say something? As I was saying earlier, that there's a lot of detention, arrest, law enforcement. This is the opportunity to make this bill right. Not trying to say one person is wrong, one is right, but it's an opportunity to put things where they belong. Because the question of the committee was that we do understand that the Constitution does, Honourable Mamburu, the Constitution does allow that you can form a law enforcement. Our question as a committee was that it doesn't mean that even if you don't need it, you can form a law enforcement. We said to you, with the current arrangement, in all ports of entry, whether you talk maritime, whether you talk air, whether you talk land, you have police there. You have police there. Our question was that, what are you going to do with those police? If you are saying they will still continue doing what they are currently doing, what will your law enforcement do? That is the answer you were supposed to answer in that meeting. Tell us if these will be doing this, these will be doing this, they will go to this level and these ones will take over. Those are the answers we need as a committee. Can I allow the commissioner, I'm sorry to expose you because you're not part of the meeting, but I know you got a feedback from your officers. Can I allow you to say something? I will allow National Treasury, Defense, then I will come back to the legal team and then allow members to speak on the issues.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think, firstly, Honorable Chair, from the South side, we support the bill and we support the model. The first thing that we wanted to confirm is that the meeting did take place, but only between subs and home affairs. It did not include the other role players as it was directed by the committee. And I also want to further say that the issues which were not necessarily coming together or creating an operational synergy and understanding, they still remain unresolved. And I think the first one is the use of the word exclusively. To us, it attaches a security and an operational meaning. I think we don't share the same meaning. When you attach a security meaning, it changes completely. But we're learning that the committee directed that it should be removed. And in view of the direction of the committee, we do not want to argue it or relate any further dynamics attached to it. We will only support the view of the committee that it be removed. But there's also few other issues that we also just want to be taken into consideration, which is also part and parcel of the view of the committee that we support. I think firstly there's unconventional policing method. We've got two conventional and unconventional. In your unconventional policing method, if crime gets committed within the unconventional side or the criminal underworld, we're not supposed to tell Home Affairs. In the same area, which is their mandate, we can't tell them. We must come in there and execute that operation. Yes, they're not entitled to know. Now, then it means, from the explanations that we get, is that we cannot implement unconventional policing there because it's now the territory of Home Affairs. And that's where it's going to be becoming a problem. But it will be worse if within the BMA there are those who are part of the criminal network, the organized criminal network. Then I'm sure it's an area that we want to amicably, that is, iron out. But when it comes to detention, they are going to arrest and hand over the police, and that those people will be under police control. But if the detention is unlawful, then the civil claim comes to the police because this person is now under our control. Further to that, there are certain arrests which can be effected, but you can't proceed with investigation. So when you actually effect an arrest, you must also, to a large extent, have a background of investigation so that you would know the two must link. Otherwise, you cannot process the person through the criminal justice system. So there's quite a lot of synergy that also needs to be talking to that. Then there's also other simple questions. If public violence breaks out in the border, within the border management, we're in charge of public order, should we deploy or not? And if we deploy, it might not be our mandate, but we have the capacity. The last one is on high-profile interventions. If an armed criminal or armed group of criminals, they will just come and put them under siege. When such happens in the police, we call for the NIU or the task force. Now, if they can be taken hostage, should we deploy the task force or not? It's within their area. So, I'm sure if we remove the barriers and then we work together with them, we will support them fully. But we don't want a staff to be territorial because we support the peace. And we also support this. So if you go more operational, deeper, you will encounter operational dynamics that will go back to hit certain provisions of the bill. Therefore, we do not just want such risks to be created. But maybe finally, because I don't want that to be long, I still want to suggest that maybe the meeting proposed by the committee proceed as directed, and as subs, we also become part. And we look at these issues amicably so, and we working together in the same spirit that we all want to contribute towards the safety of the country. And we also empower each other and support each other. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You see, we did not know the conventional, the unconventional. We're just talking. At least we've learned something today. And National Treasury.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Yanga Mputa from National Treasury. No, Yanga, Inkosinga now. First of all, the minister wants to apologize in the DG. The minister, as you know, that is waiting, wanted to come here and address the committee on the issues regarding revenue collection and customs and excise. But unfortunately, they are still in the spring meeting. They are coming back today. So the minister, without inconveniencing the committee, was requesting that maybe there should be a date whereby he comes and to address the committee on the issues. He requested that, humbly requests that. He comes and requests the committee. And as you are well aware, we've been talking with, that is, the officials have been talking. But on the 17th of April 2018, our DG wrote to the DG of Home Affairs, requesting that a meeting should take place between the two ministers at executive level, because when the cabinet approved the bill, they said that the Minister of Home Affairs and Minister of Finance should meet and deal with the unintended consequences regarding customs and excise. So we still feel that, like police, there are those, when you come to operation, because the bill to us is like a framework, Everything will be done through proclamation. But when you come to operation, those unintended consequences, if are not dealt with, they come to the fore. So on 17th of April, the letter was written. So we still request that there should be a meeting between the two ministers, and also the minister requests that he comes and address the committee. And as you are aware, because these things have been discussed many times in this committee, similar to SAPS, all that we request is that we exclude the customs and excise functions of SARS from the bill. I hear my learned friend here was saying that BMA is not going to do the revenue collection. But we want to say revenue collection is not only the point of collection of revenue. You have to follow the goods, because the goods come with the money. So you must know the goods that come into the country, and then SARS has to do the risk and the risk assessment and everything. So that is the issue. It's not only the revenue collection point. It is also a risk assessment, and how are the goods flowing and how is the money collected later. Because when the goods come into the country, you must check that, are they well charged and all that, and is VAT, customs and excise collected from those goods? And we wish to point out that on the import duties, like the customs duties, VAT and excise, they constitute about 30% of the total tax revenue. So to us, we are concerned about that issue. Hence, the minister wants to come and present to the committee. Hence, on the 17th of April, we said that we request that the ministers meet so that they sort out the unintended consequences. So I think we share the similar view as police, and then we request a carve-out that is similar to what is given to defense. That is what we are requesting. We support the bill, that is the integration, and we support the fact that we have to work together. But in this scenario, we request that, because the customs and excise collection of SARS should be carved out of the bill, because there's a risk of revenue loss at stake. That is what we are requesting. So we request that the minister be given time to come here, and that the ministers meet. That is the mandate I've been given from Treasury. Thank you.
Yanga. Did you say Yanga? Yanga. Yanga. This bill has been in process for 8 years, we were told, starting from the executive, 8 years. Our expectation as Parliament is that these issues were supposed to have been resolved at that level. But having said that, a committee gave you an opportunity to do that. Over and above the 8 years you had, you did not do it. In our previous meeting, the minister was invited. Unfortunately, there had been some changes. The minister was invited. Minister Giga did not attend. He was invited. I remember Honorable Kaula's comments that I would have loved to hear what the minister would say now as a minister of finance as compared to him as a minister of home affairs before. Those were his words. The minister was invited, and we were told that presentations were made in the portfolio committee processes. Same presentations. And your national treasurer was allowed space to present exactly the issues that you are raising. For us as a committee, the more they were presenting, the more we realized the importance of those things to be done by Home Affairs. I'll give you one example. I did not know about the tripod. Even joked about it. I said, what is dry about the pot? Why would you want to have a dry sea somewhere inland? Because we were told that there are things that will come at the port of entry, could be maritime, especially maritime. They're not fresh because they are taken to city deep. The dry port is at city deep. They are only fresh there. When we ask your officials what happens in between, they don't know. It may mean that whatever has been declared to you in paper is not what is in the container. It might be removed in the process from the port of entry and city deep. There was a presentation on those things. I don't know whether they reported to the minister. 2 days. The first one, your official came late, very arrogant and disrespectful. I can't remember that official. Mom, there's an M and O, there's a M. Yeah. Came very late. They were supposed to present first. He came at 12:45, very arrogant. There was almost an exchange between him and the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs. But we spoke about that. We gave them an opportunity to come in the following meeting. They made a presentation. So whatever the Minister is requesting was done in the committee, at the committee level. But members will comment whether we do allow the second chance of meetings between executives yourselves, because really it may mean that it's a fruitless exercise if we pass it and you still don't agree as executive. Can I allow defense? All what I wanted to tell you is that the things that are requested by the minister were granted to the department. Unfortunately, there were changes, but members will make improvements.
Thank you, Chair, and the honorable members of the committee. I am General Ashton Mlindeni Sibango, Chief of Staff, Joint Operations Division. Our minister is not here, he's in Angola as we speak. Unfortunately so. I was just here to support her. However, I would also want to say that we never met as much as we were looking forward for the meeting. The decision, however, by this committee to remove that, we support it fully, because the opposite is true. The subs has got no boundaries in terms of their mandate. What is true is that DMA has the boundaries, can only be confined to their area of responsibility. However, SAPS has not. But I will reserve such comments for the meeting specifically where we will be supporting each other. I think, as I'm saying, DMA and SANDF may have boundaries, but SAPS not have any border whatsoever. That is all what I want to say.
You note, okay, in that meeting, if guaranteed by the committee, the private strips, you're using different terms for those smaller airports along the border lines, because what you said last time, that you can put down plane that you suspect, but once you put it down, you don't have powers to arrest. Talk about that in that meeting. Who has to arrest? You may not respond here. If it's granted, the meeting is granted. Talk about that. We want a response as a committee. What are you going to do there? Okay. Who? Did I cover everyone? Legal team, we don't have much time. Phase is covered. State law advisors.
Thank you, Chair.
I want you to also talk about these threats. That former phase did not talk about that. Rude and arrogant. Did you read the inputs from the unions? You are rude and arrogant. They are going to mobilize. You did not read. That is why you did not take it serious. they are saying, if I know that we have addressed some of the things, if I know that if, because we have raised some of the things that are raised, we also have a, but they are saying they're going to mobilize their members. They will be on the streets. They're mentioning all the other stakeholders they're going to mobilize. State law advisors and parliament, when you talk about those things, are they covered, the things that they're raising, are they covered now? Or should we wait for a strike or a protest?
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps I could just start with the Kosatu comments. As I indicated before, I think there's nothing unconstitutional in the bill. We've gone through the bill, we've certified it. With regard to whether the BMA exists inside or outside of the public service, for me that is a policy decision that the department made. And as I understand from the department, there were extensive deliberations in the NEDLAC process where Kosatu was also present, where most of these issues were addressed, but the outside of the public service issue still remains. Unfortunately, I cannot comment on whether it should or should not be. As I said, that is a policy decision. But it's not wrong for it to be inside the public service, and it's not wrong for it to be outside of the public service. So that is left completely up to the committee to decide whether it wants to make any amendments that would then address Kosatu's concern in that regard. I've already addressed the SAPS issues. I think I've deliberated quite extensively with the committee also regarding that. The issue of exclusively, I've also consulted with the parliamentary law advisors and the department. It won't make any change really to the effect of clause 4.2 if we remove exclusively. It will still mean that within that border law enforcement area, certain functions, the border law enforcement functions, will be performed. It will be confined to that space, and it will be confined to the officers of the border law, the border management authority. And as the department said, officers is quite well defined in the bill. So we know who performs those duties, and then the duties that will be performed there, as I indicated previously, those will be the subject of the proclamation, the Section 97 proclamation, which will then deal with the transfer of the functions between the different departments to the BMA. And the wording of the proclamation will be very specific. It will indicate to what extent those functions are transferred, and it will also indicate where those functions will be performed, and it will only be, once again, within the border law enforcement area. And the issues that's raised in relation to, I heard the commissioner speaking about a lot of operational issues that must still be sorted out between the two departments, well, Home Affairs, the BMA, and then the police. For me, my understanding is that all these issues will be dealt with in those protocols, those memorandum of understanding, because it's very fine things that we can't work into the bill. We can't, as this is a framework bill, we can't set out
the function for each and every department that is present within the border law enforcement area. So that is why we made provision for the implementation protocols, so that those fine operational issues be included in there. So I don't think there's any problems with regard to what the SAPS wants. I think it's just some fine-tuning that must happen between the two departments as to what must be included in those implementation protocols. Other issues that were raised, I really didn't regard as serious issues that requires amendment to the bill. I saw many of the comments wanting the detention and the arrests to be performed in a certain way, and they are scared that the boundaries might be overstepped. The Constitution covers all of that, and the bill refers in numerous clauses to the Constitution and to it being subject to a certain section, Section 35, for instance, of the Constitution. And even if it were not included in the bill, we must remember that the Constitution, the PADRA, that's the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, those are constitutional legislation. It's constitutional, so it doesn't have to be included in legislation in order for decisions or actions to be subjected thereto. Every action and decision of a public officer or of a law enforcement officer will always be subject to those. So other than that, really, I didn't pick up on anything that would require extensive amendment, but perhaps just as the committee proposed, the consultation that must take place between the three different entities as to the finer details that must be brought into the bill. I also, perhaps, excuse me that I'm taking up a lot of time, just the revenue collection issue, I also see it as already being covered in the bill. So if the three entities, you know, if they meet, perhaps they can just try to resolve whether it pleases them or not. Obviously at the moment it doesn't, but for me it addresses the revenue collection, because I don't understand the BMA to be a revenue collection agent, you know, to collect the actual revenue. So I don't see it as a threat currently in the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Parliament. Thank you, Chair. I don't want to repeat what my colleagues have said. As Home Affairs indicated, we did meet yesterday and went through some of the submissions and agreed to, I did look at their responses and we were in agreement, I was in agreement with them. Specifically with the issue regarding COSATU, again, that is a policy issue. So if the committee feels that establishing the BMA outside the public service is not the correct decision, then that amendment can be effective. But obviously we need to unpack what that means practically. A lot of the comments deal with operational issues, and as the chairperson has directed, that this must be ironed out between the departments before the bill can be passed. Specifically, a chairperson from Parliament's side, the committee directed that certain proposed amendments be effected, or we draft something, and I've submitted that to the committee secretary. So specifically with regard to the instruction that the word exclusive be removed, we have drafted an amendment that removes that word. And with regard to the issue of SAPS, when I discussed the department, I thought of how could we incorporate the committee's concerns as to the functions of SAPS versus the functions of the BMA. And firstly, I want to say the bill in no way detracts any of the functions of SAPS. SAPS continues as it does right now with its existing powers and functions. So the bill does not do that. But if we want to clarify that in the bill and to make it clear to everyone when they read it and there's no confusion, then the proposed amendment that has been suggested, which I discussed with the department, is in the functions of the authority. If we look at clause 5D of the bill, so currently it says cooperate, the functions of the authority are to cooperate and coordinate its border law enforcement functions with other organs of state, border communities, or any other persons. So I think if the committee agrees with this, a way of addressing some of SAP's issues is that we say that the functions of the authority are to cooperate and coordinate its border law enforcement functions, and we specifically mention the South African Police Service. So we know that whenever the BMA functions, there's a specific provision that they are required to cooperate and coordinate with the South African Police Service. So that may in some way address the issues of the police regarding how they and the BMA fit in with regard to the ball. So if the committee agrees with that, then that could be a proposed amendment to address SAP's issues.
Honourable members. Honourable Zwane, Honourable Kaula. I have lost two hands now.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, we listened quite attentively to the presentation by the department. But Chairperson, I've got concerns as to why is it that the directive that you gave for the three departments to meet did not take place. And the bill is brought back to us without having done what the committee recommended. Of what material consequence is that? We give a directive as a committee that is not attended to. The bill is pushed back to us. You said in your opening comments, Chairperson, you are having pressure from the side of the executive that this bill must pass. But they are not doing what the committee is recommending. Now, I can't understand the reasoning behind the whole issue. The recommendations of Treasury have not been looked into. Why is this rush that you must jump all these steps and pass the bill as if it is some kind of a sausage machine? Yes. It has long been an issue that we are, or Parliament is living into, but we are not going to rush it simply because it has long been before the committees. The department's consent must know what the committee is recommending. Then thereafter, the committee will pass the bill. Simple and straightforward. If that word exclusively is not removed and you concoct some other phrases around it, we are not going to pass the bill. Simple and straightforward. We appeal to all the departments concerned, Chairperson. I thought I would talk today. We appeal to all the departments concerned to go and do what the committee has recommended, to re-look into the issues, because it is pointless for us to pass a bill rationally because the date is going to lapse. If it lapses, it's going to lapse. So be it. It's not the fault of the committee. It's the department that do not want to adhere to the recommendations of the committee. And why are we here? Why are we discussing this? If our discussions and recommendations and proposals are of no material consequence, we may as well close book and go on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable colleagues, the respective departments, National Commissioner, and the team, Home Affairs and your team, I don't know which one, Treasury and your team, and Defense and your team. Now, thanks. I also want to start by saying, you know, the absence of the Minister of Home Affairs, and the absence of the Deputy Minister, and the absence of the DG Home Affairs is a cause for concern. It's suspect. Because, you know, the process was that today, the expectation was that we approve whatever is put to us. So they are not being here, really, to me, it's making me very uneasy. It's like somebody was setting us up for something. I think, Chair, I want to agree with the proposal that we give more time. I'm saying giving some added time to whatever months to the process rather than jeopardizing the security of the country. It makes a lot of sense to me. Let's rather produce quality work and not rush things and be irrational just because we are rushing time. Anyway, this bill has been with us for a very few months. It may have started 8 years ago, but at the NCOP, it has been with us for a very few months, two or three. So let us give ourselves time, Chair. That meeting, it must take place. The Constitution, I heard Omar first saying, Clause 199 of the Constitution gives whoever power to also establish other agencies. But I want to say, Chair, that clause does not take away Clause 205, 1, 2, and 3 of the Constitution in respect of the obligations of the police service. It doesn't. So they read it as if it is the thing. No. It is just one of the clauses, but it doesn't take away the obligations, like defense was saying. It doesn't. There is already a proposal which must be considered at that meeting of the four departments. There is already a proposal by SEPS, which I would like to say that it must be considered, which says in their presentation, the border law enforcement functions with the border law enforcement area at ports of entry must be performed exclusively by the officers of the authority with due regard to the functions of the South African Police Service. Yini le zimba womafazi ukuthi ayede nje namagama anye lawo five. What is this resistance? It's a very small addition, but which gives, you know, addition to the issue of exclusivity if they are so married to it. That must be considered at the meeting. The second issue, Chair, Treasury gave us their own proposal to item 4. That must be considered at the meeting, which deals with the issue of tax collection. That must be considered at that meeting, myself. Chairperson, I asked for the issue of commissioned commissioner to be unpacked today. That has not happened. Commissioned commissioner. And Home Affairs had promised that they were going to unpack that today. They have not yet done it. It's interesting, Chair. You see, I was listening to Home Affairs as they were presenting. The assumption is that there is already a PMA. It may have been a slip of the tongue. When talking, they say, we, meaning the PMA. There is no PMA. It has not been established. But already they say, we, subs will do that, we will do. There is no PMA. You see, I'm a politician. It says to me, maybe somebody somewhere has already employed himself. You see, they have already given themselves some title somewhere. That is why I'm interested in this unpacking of the commissioned commissioner. Because there is no PMA, but already the presentation tells us that we. It's just a foolish argument, Chair, that I'm putting on the table. But you know, politicians are just like that. They make assumptions which end up causing a lot of noise. I'm making that assumption. Next time when we get addressed, I want that assumption to be taken away. Because there is no PMA until the president has signed this bill to law. I want Chair to be placed in a position where I can defend this bill when it becomes an act. I don't want to be placed in a position where I also dissociate myself to it and I am forced to write to the president and say, please don't sign it. let's consult. There is just one last issue, Chair. There is a request here in your documents by Nehao. They are requesting to also see you. I don't know what you are going to do about that one. It refers to the issues of staffing. It may not be our issue, but I mean, listening will do no harm. Because I remember during the previous presentations, I don't recall whether it was Treasury or the other department, they were also questioning the issue of who will be seated when. Now, which tells me some of the issues are still so much, you know, an issue for discussion among the government departments. And that is why then this kind of attitude by staff, because if people who are senior in the departments come to us here and they have no clue about the way forward in respect of issues of staffing, then you can imagine what is happening in the lower levels in respect of the people who are affected by this change. It must be clarified, Chairperson, so that things are ironed out smoothly. Maybe it can even take away that threat of a protest action and whatever. But I'm saying, Chair, it's just put into you, it's your decision as to how what you do. It's just that I saw it somewhere, so I thought maybe I should just flag it for you to maybe take a decision on it. I rest my case.
Hutting, are you fine? Honorable Hutting, are you fine?
I think that a meeting of the reluctant role players should precede further discussions.
Samga?
Nasihlalo ebunyanisweni kwasekuqaleni besingafanelanga uba siyatha abaphulaphuli kuba kaloku ngokwezigqibo zentlanganiso egqithileyo sasithe mabahambe bayokuhlala. Bendicinga into yoba kwayi-presentation le yenziwayo mna, presentation le yimiphumela yemithingi ebihleli, nothi imiphumela yomntu omnye okanye department enye okanye ezimbini. Bendicinga uba sihlalo imiphumela yemithingi ebihleli sibe ngokuna siyayipasisa okanye siyayigqithisa i-bill to uba mayihambe iyoadoptwa ehousini. Bendingazi into okokuba kanti sisaxoxa ngeedipartment ezimbini nenye, ingathi simoshe kwa ixesha eli lethu ngokuchopha apha siphulaphule. Bekufanele into okokuba sibakhulule bahamba bayokwenza laa nto sasibaxelele yona okokuba mabayenze. Mhlawumbi ke sihlalo ukhona lo mntu ufuna sim account sile okokuba kutheni laa meeting sasithe mayihlale ibe ayihlalanga, sinikwe izizathu ezicacileyo before sibe siyaqhubeleka na ngayiphi na i-presentation eyawuthi yenziwe apha phambi kwethu nakwixesha elizayo, ukwenzela into okokuba bafunde isifundo into okokuba asikholongo thina iziqu, sikholo aba bantu baseMzantsi Afrika babephakamisele izandla baze basolula. Inkosi.
Honorable Committee Whip.
Chairperson, as a Christian and a believer and a traditionalist, I'm responding based on that. Because at the beginning of this meeting, I made a proposal that let us release these officials because there shall be no benefit in this meeting. We shall be questioning people who are not able to respond to us in some of the things. I'm saying this because, Chairperson, you see what happens at the borders. It's a pity because as a committee we've been there in most of them. We see what happens there. The time that the department is wasting, I wonder whether they care about the citizens of South Africa. But nonetheless, let's give them enough time. We'll arrive, Chairperson, one day where we are supposed to arrive. Thanks.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I'm trying to be fine. I'm not fine, if I may be honest with you, as members are saying, because we had thought that you would speak to the issues that we have requested you to go and deal with them. It's unfortunate because we are dealing with, pardon me if I'm using a wrong term, lawyers. In the world of lawyers, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing right, as long as you can defend it. That's what I'm reading from the inputs that you are putting. I want to take an example of the input by said law advisor. One example. She's saying there's nothing wrong, unconstitutional, whether it is outside the public sector or inside the public sector. That's not an advice. Supposed to give us an advice, a state law advisor. Now, you're using, I know, that's how they do. You know, lawyers can argue, I can kill a person now. My lawyer will argue until I win the case that I did not kill the person. We don't want that in this environment. We don't want that. I just want to speak to Home Affairs. Open yourself. Open, be objective. These inputs that I met here are not to win the case or lose the case. It's about coming with a credible bill. Open up. Open up. I don't know whether you listen carefully, both state law advisors and Home Affairs, what the National Commissioner was saying. Fundamental issues. They can't be operational to me. They can't. One example that the National Commissioner has raised, he said, these people though that will be arrested or detained, they will be taken to SAPS. If there was a wrong arrest, SAPS will be sued because now they are in the hands of SAPS. It can't be an operational thing. It can't be a small thing to me where I am sitting. There is a number of them. In fact, what he said, it was an eye-opener to me. He raised issues that because we're not in that environment, we spoke about them, but not as deep as the commissioner was doing when he was presenting. I said when I started, it is our intention to finalize this bill because we don't have time. We don't have time. But we want you to help us to finalize the bill. Open up. It's not your bill. It's not your bill. You are doing this for South Africa. We are all South Africa. It's not Home Affairs' bill. I want to say open up. State law advisors and parliamentary law advisors, help us to finalize this bill. In fact, you were supposed to request for a postponement of this meeting, even before we came here, because you knew why we are here. We gave you assignment to do, but it did not happen. You still come back. We discussed things that we already discussed in the previous meeting. All members, with your input, let us allow the meeting to take place. But it can't be open-handed. Honorable Kabula, we are saying it's a few months. We started with this process last year. It was referred to us last year, June. It was referred to us, yeah. But ourselves, we started in March because we were worried about the bill itself. It's almost a year now, we're in April. We want to finalize this bill, but we cannot rubber stamp. We said it from the beginning. We can't rubber stamp. We don't want to rubber stamp. We want to apply our minds as a committee. I did say in our last meeting that I had an interaction with the chairperson of the portfolio committee. Some of the things that we're discussing here, the portfolio committee, the exclusive part, they ask you to remove that thing, but it's still here. I don't know who is married to that exclusive. Please, can that person help us? I hear what you are saying. You are saying even if you remove it, the meaning will still be the same. That is what we want to change, the meaning. We want to change that meaning. We want to say police cannot be given boundaries that you can't operate here. I don't know what words you will use. I don't know what English you will use. All what you are saying. In fact, we agreed in that meeting. We asked you a question that what will be wrong if we remove the exclusive? You said nothing. But you still come back, still argue the exclusive. All what you are saying, allow police to do their work. If you have nothing, as Honorable Kaula, that sometimes you make us to suspect things that are not there, the manner in which you defend some of the things. Can we do that? We are really, really prepared to approve, finalize this bill. We want to do it like yesterday. But we can't rubber stamp. Take inputs that are raised by COSATU and NEHAO. Very genuine issues. They are saying the government does not have money. We don't want to pay people exorbitant salaries. It's an important matter. That is why they are arguing that it must be within the public sector. Can you look at that? Look at those issues. All what I'm asking from you, just open your mind. Read those inputs with an understanding what these people want to say. And see if it cannot add value if you follow what they're saying. I adding to what Honorable Kaula was saying, I don't know. The issue of the tripod, you did not address it. We raised it very sharp. But those things must still be searched at the entry level. Not at the tripod, because nobody knows what happens in between. It must come up as part of our input that we raise as a committee. The issue of the, there's a question by, I don't know when you say Western Cape government, are you referring Western Cape province? Why do you call them government if they're a province? Can we address them right province, not government, because they're just a province? I want the issue that they're raising, I also have, they are asking, I don't know what it's them, but somebody was saying, how is that commissioner be different from the commissioner of police? That is the question they're asking. Because the commissioner of police is appointed by the president, the commissioner of BMA will be appointed by the president. So the question that they're asking, how is these two commissioners will be different? What came to my mind that why the choice of a commissioner? Couldn't we use other terms? Why commissioner? I'm not from that field, but why? Because let's say a person is arrested now, wrongly so. Who do you talk to? The commissioner of BMA, commissioner of police? Why that choice of a commissioner? Is it the rule of security that if a person is appointed in that area, had some security element, the person must be called commissioner? I don't know. I'm just asking, I'm not saying let's remove it. But I think they're asking a relevant question there. I'm not going to raise all the issues that I had for my side, except to say, go back and meet. Is 2 weeks enough for you to meet? 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Commissioner, Home Affairs, National Treasury. You're not going to come back to us, National Treasury. Go and argue there in that meeting and agree. You come with recommendations to us. That is why we want all the ministers to be here, to be part of the meeting. A chance was given, I think, more than enough twice already. Go ahead and meet. 2 weeks. Can we give you 2 weeks? Are we fair?
Chair, may I just on that point just come back, because I know the DG is out of the country just for a week or 2 weeks. I'm not sure. I just need to check his diary. I don't know if I come back to chairperson in that regard or how we do it.
So we can check all the time until we're out of office.
I was going to say, chairperson, though it is them who are supposed to meet, let us also as a committee consider the program that we have in our hands. At the end of the day, you write to the department to tell them that the committee is free on these 2 days or there is a vacancy in the following 3 days, so that they man up their offices and then they come to us.
What the committee is saying is that we will identify a slot in our program. We will tell you when we'll be available. Our expectation is that you must have met. Then you come with answers. But all what I'm requesting, open your minds. Be objective. The career of law that you can defend, the indefensible, just put it aside for the sake of the country and do the right thing. Do we agree on that one? Okay, all members, if there is nothing else, I don't know whether to thank people who did not do what they were supposed to do. Let me thank honourable members for your time and wish you good luck in that meeting. Home Affairs, you want to say something? I'm closing the meeting.
Sorry, Chair, just with regard to, I need to respond to what Honourable Gawula also indicated. It's a slip of the tongue. I will never say that I know that the bill is not on operation as yet. It's only when it's assented and signed by the President. Slip of tongue, whatever we call it. Maybe I'm not that a good presenter. So I do apologise and I retract unreservedly, Chair.
If there is a need that we help you to coordinate that meeting, we are prepared to do so, because that meeting must take place. Otherwise, we're not going to move. If you come back before you sit, unfortunately, we cannot help you. You go to meet and resolve those matters. And we then say, I promise you, if you agree on these issues, we're going to approve the bill, finalize the bill. Our intention to find
out. Chair, we'll definitely take that back and we'll arrange the meetings as requested by the department. Also, we'll discuss that with the relevant role players.
Thank you very much. The meeting stand adjourned. I'm going to go down. I'm going to go down.
Okay.